Please state your name for the record.
It's Thomas Parry.
Okay, Mr. Thomas Parry. Matthew Boyle is conducting this interview. I hear you've been committing the crime of playing video games. How do you plead?
Guilty as charged.
Let the record state, it's Tom and Matt Attack. Very serious tone from what we went into before that. We were all high-pitched voices and drinking tea and having a good time, and then I brought it down a level, Tom.
You did?
You didn't even know how to respond.
I didn't. It was very dramatic.
It was. I tried to bring an element of drama to the podcast every now and again.
Yeah. Very good. How have you been? All right?
Well, apart from being completely soaked this morning, thanks to the wonderful rain here...
You'll get over it.
...lashing the Tom and Matt shack... yeah, I'm good. I'm all right.
Yeah?
Yeah. How about you? How are you yourself?
I'm pretty well. I've enjoyed a very hearty meal.
Yeah, my parents are over, so they cooked one of those, their Sunday lunches, which to you in the UK, you might be like, oh, of course, it's a Sunday they're recording this. Why would they want a Sunday lunch? I haven't had a Sunday lunch in 9 friggin' months, Tom. Mm. 9 months
worth
is
waiting
a long time.
For, yeah?
That baby of a Sunday lunch was long overdue.
Yep. I'm going to give birth to it soon.
I'm sure I will. But until then, what have you been playing?
What have I been playing? Well, I'll talk a little bit about last night. We had a few people over to play some video games.
You did, because it was
I did invite you.
It was your birthday Tom. It was your birthday. Happy birthday
a busy
from
boy.
The podcast.
Well, thank you very much.
Yeah, I had parents to entertain. Yeah, yeah. I put on a party hat and I rode a unicycle. It was fun. I didn't really.
But it was a nice night, you know, and it's not often I've done this here in Denmark, at least. And we played on the PS4, solely on the PS4.
Yeah.
So what did you play? What do you think we might have played?
Sports Friends.
No.
Nidhogg.
Yes. How do you know we play Nidhogg?
I guessed, because it is a fun multiplayer experience.
That was the hit of the night.
Nidhogg 1 or 2?
1.
Okay.
That's something I quite like about the original's minimalist
presentation. Me too.
And seeing the new one looks kind of cool, but...
It just feels like more Nidhogg. Yeah, we almost bought it last week before the podcast.
Yeah.
Or the week before even, because we didn't podcast last week. Mm. It's my bad.
So that was really fun. We also played Oh Sir, the Insult Simulator.
Yeah, you just said about this. I'd seen it on the PlayStation Store. I would assume...
I was dubious about how good it was going to be.
It would be like the Monkey Island battles, you know?
See, I can't recall what they were like.
Well,
I haven't played enough Monkey Island.
Essentially, you would walk around the island, you would find pirates... And then instead of fighting them, they would give you insults and then you would reply to them.
You kind of construct your own insult from various different choices.
Okay.
And you layer them up, you know.
Is it like a Cards Against Humanity fair where you make an insult?
It's like you get something like your mother.
Yeah.
You know, shops at Tesco and smells like old shit or something like that.
Do you make these up yourself or are they like
You get
there?
All those little segments and then... Each turn, you add to it.
Okay.
And if there's no good word there, then you have to, like, miss a turn. And that might give the other opponent the upper hand. And if you're looking for an extra line and nothing fits, you can always drink a cup of tea.
Okay.
And that gives you two other options for insults. But you can only, I think, drink one cup of tea per round.
Okay.
I think that's how it works anyway.
It's very British then.
Yeah, oh, it's very British. There's a range of characters in there.
I had guessed from the Tesco's reference, but...
Oh, yeah, but
I don't
think there is a Tesco's reference in it. You can choose where you fight as well.
Okay.
So you can do it in a pet shop, by a lake, on a train. And the pet shop starts off with... It's always a subject to why the argument is taking place. The pet shop one is the obvious dead parrot sketch from Monty Python.
Okay.
They use that as the incentive for the argument. Of course, you go in a totally different... direction from there. And as far as I'm aware, everyone's British and obviously talks with a rather posh British accent.
Yeah.
And there's a few... H.P. Lovecraft is a character in there as well.
Okay.
Which was a little surprising. There's sort of like ones that are based off celebrities. You also got the Cockney Geezer and, you know, there's a few...
There's a few caricatures in there then.
Yeah, okay. Certainly. And it's well worth having a go at, because you can come up with some very creative stuff.
I'm sure you could.
But it's always one-on-one, so yeah. it's a two-player game. We played that stickballed game.
Yeah, that's the dodgeball Norwegian thing that you played way back when in VBOG Animation.
That's correct. Festival, right? And I picked this up ages ago, but I haven't had the occasion to really play it until last night, and that went down the storm as well.
Yeah.
Great game. Although, for some, it wasn't as easy to pick up and play as others. I think it's quite an accessible game, actually. It's quite straightforward. Another game we played was Obliteracers.
Okay, I've never heard of that.
Obliteracers is a little bit like Micro Machines, a little bit like Mario Kart. It's a kart racer, essentially.
Right.
But it's all about being the last one standing, so it's elimination.
Okay, so it's like a destruction derby type affair then. Yeah. So you're trying to ram people off the road and use power-ups?
Yes,
or...
yeah, that's right. The screen scrolls behind you, though. It is a race. It's got a track.
Okay.
So it falls around a circuit.
Yeah.
If you can't keep up with the screen because it scrolls so fast, you get...
Okay.
Like Micro Machines, you lose a life, yeah? And there's loads of different weapons. It's a little bit tricky sometimes to actually see what weapon you've got.
Right.
But you get used to it after a while. And it's got a bunch of quite cool characters. It's made in Australia as well.
Okay.
You know, you've got a few Australian animals in there.
A kangaroo, a koala, a didgeridoo.
None of those ones.
One of those is
not
an
animal. More slightly obscure ones. And it's pretty fun, in fact.
Dingbat.
A what?
A dingbat.
No, I don't think there was a dingbat.
Wombat,
sorry.
Even.
A wombat. I think there might have been a wombat in there.
Okay.
A few robots as well. They're kind of kooky characters. Nicely done. And so are the tracks. It's worth checking out. It's only like $3.99 on the PlayStation Store. It gave me my Micro Machines type fix more than Micro Machines does.
Well,
so
that's good.
Our friend Dan Kelly, he said he saw we had Micro Machines on the PlayStation. Oh, let's play Micro Machines. I said, no, you don't want to play that. You can't play Micro Machines. It's not even...
Local
multiplayer. Sorry. Unless you want to play the battle mode, which isn't necessarily what people associate with Micro Machines. So... I thought we'd mix it up and play a few more obscure indie games, maybe. Overcooked was also played.
The best game on the PlayStation 4.
Which got very stressy at one point, where where I had to just sit back and give someone else the controller. There were five of us, so we could...
You wouldn't hack it then with me. I'd be swearing at you. I'd be Gordon Ramsay at the helm.
Where's the burgers?
Where are the burgers? Give me the onions. Exactly.
We need onions. No, not mushrooms.
What are you doing, Barry? What are you doing? So I would go, Tom.
But when you've got that zen-like thing
going...
Yeah,
when you're in the moment of
when
like, okay,
you've got it,
everyone
you know,
knows
no
what
one,
they're doing.
Then it's the quietest game ever, because everyone knows exactly what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
But
it takes a few rounds. It takes.
Otherwise, it can...
We were... me, my fiancée Martha, and Jason, our friend, who were playing it on a regular basis once a week. It took a while to get to that point where you could just go. It was just... You cooked.
Mm.
And then we still find it a struggle. Like, if we took a week off, we'd go back to it, and then we'd still make a mare of the first three attempts to make burgers or a soup or a pizza or whatever.
And all the obstacles it throws in your way.
Yeah, exactly. All of the sliding bits and all the ice bullshit. Yeah. It would be a pain.
But how do you find it with, like, four players as opposed to two players or three players? Is there a perfect number of players, you think,
Four players, if they know what they're doing, is ideal.
Yeah, it's ideal.
Three is good, but a challenge at some points, because some levels clearly are meant to be played with four people.
Mm.
And so you will get areas of the map that are completely inaccessible, and there's one person there, and they can't do all the things they need to do themselves.
Yeah, two can be rather challenging, can't it?
Yes.
Yeah.
I can't play two-player. I can't get my head around the whole switching between two chefs thing. I couldn't do it properly when I tried it, so...
Oh, you play two-player with four characters?
You can play you play two-player with four characters.
Oh, I never have.
Yeah?
No.
You can.
Yeah,
you
I've never played it characters. That way. I've just played it with just having two characters on screen at any time.
I don't even know how you would hit the points there, though.
Yeah.
So...
We got so far.
Yeah.
But three was working out pretty good.
Three's
actually
good. Four is ideal if people know what they're doing.
Yeah, totally with you on that. Great game. I think it's on the Switch now, is it? Or is it coming to Switch?
It is. It's on Switch.
It's on Switch already, so you can get it on everything.
You can.
If you haven't already checked it out,
it
then,
is on every console under the sun, I'm sure. It is on the VTech Smile.
Yeah, it's actually not a brand new concept. In fact, there are other games that have done this before. I remember a game called Order Up on the Wii, which was incredibly similar to this. Not quite not quite as good, I don't think, as Overcooked. Overcooked sort of refines that recipe, shall we say, very well. Great fun game. Border Up was pretty good, I remember, back in the day. I haven't played it for years, so I don't know exactly how they compare, but that was a pretty good game too. So great fun night. Didn't play some of the staples of a usual multiplayer night, which are Mario Kart. That's because we were just on the PS4. So that was good in a way. Tetris was played as well. Did reasonably well. Tetris versus... That's Tetris Ultimate for the PS4.
Yeah, you didn't buy Puyo Puyo versus Tetris yet then. Didn't pull the trigger.
Not yet, no. I'm still waiting for that Switch version.
Fair enough.
When I get my Switch.
You need to get your Switch, Tom. Seen it in El Gigante over here, 2,299 krona.
Mm.
Getting a good price over here, Tom. Probably cheaper than the UK.
I don't know if it is yet.
I think it's probably cheaper here than it is in the UK, because get them for love nor money in the UK.
I'm not planning on buying it right away. I'm waiting there till Christmas.
It's fair.
For Mario.
It's fair. It's only a month away, mate. It's only a month away.
I haven't been tempted by Mario Rabbids, although I do appreciate the look of that game.
I have been playing it, Tom. Funny you should mention that. That's what I've been doing with my time. I really like that game.
Yeah, it looks great.
It's good. Long time listeners of the podcast know that I picked up XCOM once upon a time. I really liked XCOM. I was really shit at XCOM because it's a very, very difficult game.
This and XCOM for beginners. Is that what you're going to say?
This is XCOM for beginners. However, I would say I would take, if you are really shit at XCOM, if you've played the original, I mean the remake on the PlayStation 3 and Xbox 360 and PC. If you've played that game and you find it very challenging, you are still going to be challenged by Mario and Rabbids.
And this is assuming everybody listening knows what XCOM is.
Yeah, XCOM is a strategy game. It's kind of a little bit like Fire Emblem. It's turn-based. You are in a grid. You control a squad of people. I think XCOM is 4, whereas Mario and Rabbids is 3. And then there are enemies on the maps and there are objectives. For example, like you need to reach a certain point, you need to kill a certain amount of enemies, you need to wipe out all the enemies on the map, or you need to, for example, disarm a bomb. So you need to get to a point, defend the point so you can disarm the bomb. It's very good. It's humans versus aliens. It's all very cool. Mario and Rabbids, obviously, it being a Nintendo game, is a lot more lighthearted, but not any less complex. There is still a very unique skill tree in Mario and Rabbids that I didn't expect. There's a lot of... Whereas XCOM, you would go mission, you would do the mission, you would kill whatever, face your objective, and then go to a command hub. Mario and Rabbids just sees you carry on through the world. It's all world-based in the same way a Mario thing would be. Think of it almost like the world map in Super Mario 3.
Yeah.
So you do the little battle, and then you continue running along the path until the next battle.
Yeah.
It's very cool in that respect.
You like that as a good addition. I thought when I first saw that was, they just needed to have some more traditional type Mario gameplay. So they introduced these sequences
It's got some interesting puzzle aspects to it. Yeah, there's a lot of button pressing to unlock certain switches that then unlock certain switches and then do mini games to find upgrades and weapons and stuff in the map.
Is it jarring to go from one playstyle to another?
It's very well executed, actually. Surprisingly so. I thought it would have been weird at first. But you just kind of follow along these paths. And it does kind of limit what they can do with the puzzles, I think, because they're in this contained area.
Mm.
But I generally think it's really good. I will say the XCOM for beginners that everyone else is throwing around needs to be taken with a pinch of salt. Because I'm really, really bad at XCOM. I don't think I beat the first couple of missions in XCOM before realizing, okay, this is not for my difficulty level.
I've heard it can be very challenging, this Mario Rabbids
game. It can. Yeah. There's a lot of really nice combo stuff you can do. So you can, for example, if you're looking at cover, where in XCOM you would have like maybe a 99% chance of hitting someone. It was never exact like 100%, you're going to nail this thing. So you could run up to someone with a shotgun and go, ha, 98%, I'm going to nail you with this. Mm. And it would show the animation of you like shooting the shotgun and then you'd miss. The only way you miss in Mario and Rabbids is there's 0%, which is if you can't see them or they're behind high cover. There's a 50% chance they're behind low cover, you can hit them, or 100% if they're out in the open. There is no variables there. You will hit for whatever and there's a... You have a range of damage, obviously. Like the example, the weapons I have now still in the first world, but towards the end of it are 35 to 45 damage. So you know you're going to hit somewhere in that range. So it's never exact, but at least there are some indicators to say, okay, I could probably kill this guy if I move there. your turn order is essentially your whole squad. They can attack and they can move. In your movement, you can run and hit someone. So you can run and melee an enemy.
Boom.
But you can also run at your, for example, like if you're playing as Rabid Peach, you can run back to Mario and you can be thrown. So you can hit an enemy, run back to Mario, and then throw, which extends your reach. And then you can fire from a better position.
Yeah.
As in all of these kinds of games, up high is better. You will deal more damage if you have the high ground. All characters have their own special secondary abilities. So Rabid Peach is a shield. Rabid Luigi is a nullify special attacks. Mario has a thing that I believe is called Overwatch in XCOM, which is essentially as soon as they see an enemy running their line of sight that was in cover, they will shoot at it and it won't cost you anything. It's like an extra shot. They've started introducing some enemies now as I've got into that game where that becomes a bit of a problem. So you have to go, okay, do I want to use Overshot and do damage? Because there's these things called Brawlers. And they're huge, huge hulking enemies, and whenever you shoot them, they will slowly run towards you because of it, but they won't move very fast. But you need to kind of kite those around the level, so maybe have someone in the top right corner shoot them, so they run that way, and then have someone in the top left corner shoot them, so they start running left, and it can be very challenging. It honestly, like, the XCOM for beginners thing really needs to be taken with a pinch of salt. There is an easy mode that you can instigate at the start of the battle if you're really struggling. But I've never found I needed to do that yet. I've not got gold on everything, though, admittedly. I've got some silvers, but it's been all right. Another annoying thing, you don't heal between battles, so you kind of need to constantly rotate your squad, which means you need to make sure they all have the best weapons, they all are upgraded, and all this other stuff.
I can imagine that sort of gameplay is quite satisfying, the upgrading aspect of it. And
yeah, it's not too bad.
Customizing.
It never feels like it's the be-all and end-all. It never feels like it's like, oh man, I really need to do this, at least not yet, in the early stages where I am. But I think that's perhaps because the skills are a little bit obtuse, maybe. Other than like, oh well, you can hit two enemies on a turn. There's lots of things that go improve your shot damage by 40%. Percentages don't really feel as concrete as some of the other choices you can make for those characters. Story's pretty nice for those of you. I'm sure this has been talked to death on other podcasts and other articles. Essentially, you are starts off with some gamer girl who is like on the front cover of Wired or something, and she's amazing at inventing things. And she creates these goggles that can merge items together. So, example, like a couch and a lamp, and they will make like an illuminated couch or whatever. And she goes to eat her food. And while she's doing that, the Rabbids time machine from the Rabbids games, the washing machine, happens to land in her room. And they start tearing apart this room of this girl, who is, for all intents and purposes, like the biggest Nintendo fan in the world. Like, all of her room is decked out in Mario.
Is this live
Apparel.
Action?
No, it isn't.
No. It's, I'm just picturing in my head that the Rabbids jumped into a live action situation.
That would be awesome, but no, it isn't. It's all 3D. Right. And so they start like playing with all the Mario toys and all this other stuff. And one of them puts on these goggles because on the table, and they start morphing things, and essentially they rip a hole in the fabric of the universe or something, or the time machine goes awry. Yeah. And one of them then gets these goggles molded onto its head. And it seems like the actions and all of the things are very much in tune with Nintendo, in that this Rabbid isn't Bowser, it isn't super evil.
No.
It's got these things molded on its head, and it doesn't really know what it's doing, and it's trying to get them off. But because it's merged itself with the goggles, it can't really do that.
Okay, so they're not necessarily the bad guys for Rabbids. They're just a bit confused.
Yeah, from what I understand, some of the stalwarts of Mario bad guys, like Baby Bowser, Bowser Jr. and stuff, will come into this game in later stages. So there will be some of the traditional bad guys, but we'll see. I'm enjoying it so far. It's been one of those really nice games. It's perfect for the Switch.
Yeah, because it's good for portable
Yeah, I can pick up and play like one part of a level, and then I can put it down again after I've defeated the battle.
You can save after
it saves automatically every 5 minutes or so. It's really good for
That's nice. That's good to know. Cool. I mean, I'm intrigued by the game. I'd like to give it a go sometime.
I think you should. I really do recommend it. I think it's pretty damn good.
I had heard that maybe because the Rabbids have so much personality that they kind of make maybe Mario and friends look a little bit more bland in comparison.
Yeah, but I mean...
But that's not necessarily a bad thing.
No, it isn't. No. That's in the same way that, generally speaking... You know, Mario's like Tintin. Tintin, you read those comic books, and they are not about Tintin. Like, Tintin just happens to be there. He's a reporter. He's observing all this stuff. Like, Tintin is Captain Haddock. Tintin is... These are larger-than-life villains that surround him.
Yes.
Mario and everyone else is just kind of a cipher in the middle of it, and the rabbits are there, and they show their character. It's good. Honestly, like it hasn't been an issue for me so far anyway. Maybe it gets a bit OTT later in the game, or maybe a few hours into it, I'll be like, okay, I got it. They're rabbits. Good job. But as someone who's never really found them that annoying anyway...
No, neither have I. Okay. I mean, I was just wondering how they make Mario and friends look in comparison, that's all, because I've always quite enjoyed the rabbits. Funny.
But Mario and co. look as bland as they always do, so what are you going to do there?
Yeah, but they're still Mario and co. and we still like them because...
You know,
of what they
nostalgia,
are.
Nostalgia, innit?
He's just a happy, chappy plumber. Or not a plumber, as I read recently.
Yeah, he's not a plumber anymore.
Apparently, he used to be a plumber a long time ago. So according to Nintendo's official Mario profile.
Yeah, in Japan.
In Japan.
Yeah.
He used to be a plumber.
Now he's not.
Now he enjoys just sports.
Yeah, exactly. He's not a union man, you see. He broke ranks and he had to give it up.
We talked about rabbits there briefly. I can kind of relate that to something I've been playing recently. And that is Rayman 2.
Oh, really?
I played that the other day.
Nintendo 64?
No, actually. I never owned Rayman 2 on Nintendo 64 and still don't to this day, despite having a relatively large N64 collection.
I saw it in Epic Panda yesterday.
This is because I already had it on the PC and then I got it on the PS1, downloaded it, which is a version I've been playing recently. And, you know, that game, I feel like it could come back. I feel like that's a game worthy of maybe a remaster or something. Yeah. You know, we see Crash Bandicoot come back, maybe Spyro will. But Rayman 2, really, I don't know how much you played of that game. Or if
not you've... a lot. Not as much as the first one. I love the first game. The first game probably ranks among my favourite platformers.
Really? I think you'd really like Rayman 2. The design, the ideas within there are still very good. I think it shows its age a little bit now. Some things feel a little off. The way Rayman jumps is a little floaty, and it kind of makes it difficult to do some of the platforming, or you think it's difficult. Usually you end up where you think you're going to end up, but the way Rayman jumps kind of makes you think otherwise at times. The camera actually copes reasonably well in this game and kind of follows the action as you would hope it would. But there are a lot of different ideas, you know. Every level changes things up a little bit, and you'll get unique mechanics that maybe you'll only see in that level, for instance, you know.
I have a lot of apprehension around 3D platformers, especially older ones. Like
Rayman's a good one. Rayman 2, it really knows what it's doing.
It's on the PS2, right?
You can get a game called Rayman Revolution.
Yeah.
Which is, the PS2 port of Rayman. It's available on everything. I think it would make a very good subject for a video about console ports.
Yeah.
Because that game has been on the DS, I think the 3DS, the PS1, the PS2.
Color or advanced?
I don't know how those they can't be quite as the same as the console ones. N64, Dreamcast, PC. Yeah. It's imported to about everything. The PS1 version actually looks quite nice, all things considered.
Yeah.
Of course, it's a little bit jittery. You know how PS1 games can be.
Mm-hmm.
But all that art direction and lighting and ideas, they're all there, and it's actually a very good-looking PS1 game.
Yeah.
I'd say maybe some of the other versions are preferable in the visuals department, but there is, for me, there was something appealing about seeing a PS1 pull off something which is kind of very impressive.
Well,
3D.
I mean, we've already seen it with Croc Legend of the Gobos, Tom. What else could you could you want from a 3D platformer on a PlayStation?
Well, Rayman really is... a work of art in many respects. You know, it shows its age a little now, but it's still worth going back to and trying out, and I think definitely worthy of some sort of remaster.
Yeah.
Rayman 2. I played Rayman 3 a little bit, never really got into that game in the same way as Rayman 2.
My Rayman, for me, 2D titles are always best. Origins and Revolution?
You know what, I was thinking the other day, whatever happened to Rayman? Oh, it just morphed into Rabbids, and then You just mentioned that now reminded me of how good those 2D platform Rayman games were and still are to this
day. I mean, it's getting ported to the Switch. The last game, it wasn't Origins. That was the first one, right?
Rayman Origins and then Rayman Legends.
Rayman Legends is getting ported to the Switch. I believe that's out next week.
Is it really?
I think so, yeah.
Great game, but we've been playing
Rayman
it for years.
Rayman Legends Definitive Edition is the name of it. It is a budget title, so it's only 300 krona.
The Vita and the Wii U.
The Vita, ta.
And I think it got released on everything else, didn't it, as well?
Yeah, it did. It got released on the PS4 and the Xbox One and stuff. That's why it was delayed for the Wii U, if you remember. So.
Uh-huh. Sorry, I've got the hiccups.
Crikey Moses, Tom.
That's happened. Rayman 2. Great. What about a game we've both been playing?
What's that, Tom?
Yakuza 0.
Oh, yes, we have. A quick cap on Yakuza 5. Not as good.
Oh, we haven't covered it yet.
We didn't cover the end. I'm going to leave it short. Not as good as Yakuza 4. Probably not as good as Yakuza 2. I'm debating if it's even as good as Yakuza 1. Technically very impressive. Storyline doesn't really do anything for me. It feels like it didn't really need to exist, which is very worrying in the wake of Yakuza 6 coming out.
Oh dear,
that's
why you play a Yakuza game, isn't it? For its story,
yeah.
Otherwise it's just punching people.
Yeah.
But I have to testify that punching people is
punching
very satisfying.
Very fun.
There is an action sequence at the end of the first chapter of Yakuza 0. Yeah. Which really has a great pace and energy to it.
So imagine Yakuza 1 builds up to a sequence like that.
Yeah.
Like all the while you're fighting more and more people, and then eventually you go to the Millennium Tower, which I don't think is in this game because I don't think it's
Tokyo Tower.
It's called the Millennium Tower in Yakuza 1. And you go there. It's essentially Tokyo Skytree, but I don't think they could call it that.
Oh, okay.
And you go to the Millennium Tower and you fight your way up it. And you do that in the same way you do in that sequence in Yakuza 1. You're like, oh my god, like...
Yakuza 0.
Kiryu goes... No, this is the end of Yakuza 1. So you've had all your street brawls and you've built up and there's been more and more enemies thrown at you and whatever. And essentially, like, Kiryu walks into the street in front of this building and there's just a ton of Yakuza. Mm. And you're like, right, I gotta get to the top.
Yeah.
And then you end up beating up like 100 dudes to get to the top of this tower. And it's super satisfying because he's just like, oh man, Kiryu's a badass.
Yeah.
And then it just kind of becomes a thing that you do every now and again in every Yakuza game now. It's very much as a stalwart of like them trying to chase that same feeling of like, wow, this guy's a total badass.
It's like that, what is it, 70-person battle in Shenmue.
Yeah.
That's what it reminds me of.
Yeah.
But this, I like the little interludes within it between segments of the fight.
Mm-hmm.
You may have a quick time event or something. You may end up jumping through, kicking someone through a window.
Yeah.
You know, it's very exciting. And I didn't think the combat, actually, there was much to it to begin with. But as you play more, there is a little hidden depth. I'm playing with a rush mode. So am I right in thinking when you're in this mode, this style?
So this is a new mode introduced for Yakuza. There's Brawler, which is essentially how
it would
Kazuma has always played.
Yeah, I'm playing the other one.
Rush is essentially how Akiyama plays, who is my preferred Yakuza character.
Because I don't think you can throw in rush mode.
No, you can't, which is a bit odd, because you can as Akiyama.
No, because I was wondering, why can't I throw? I could throw earlier in the game. But I think somehow along the way I'd selected rush as my default fight
style. It's on your sticks. You press your D-pad to switch between them.
Oh, you can do it in the battle.
I now also have, I think it's called heavy style, which is essentially the style of Saijima, who's another character from Yakuza. So you can have your cake and eat it too as Kiryu. Because I think maybe a lot of people did what I did at the end of Yakuza 5, and there's a bit where all of the characters split up, and it's like, okay, two of us are going here, two of us are going here, and I was like, oh, please send Akiyama away with Saijima, because then I could play as Akiyama, I could play as Kiryu.
Yeah.
But it didn't. It put Kiryu and Akiyama together, and I was like, oh, shit, I really like both of these characters, which I'm like, I played as Akiyama, because the speed of doing that just adds so much more to the fighting for me.
Yeah, I like that dashing move, and I like that block where you kind of dodge punches.
Yeah.
So you can hold block next to someone next to the dodge. It made the fight with I forget his name.
The Yakuza guy at the end.
The Yakuza guy who's trying to
frame Kazuma.
Kazuma. Yeah, yeah. He sort of tried to overtake the leader, it feels like.
He's one of the lieutenants in the Dojima family. I cannot remember the guy's name. He's not been in any other Yakuza
Jose
games.
Jose or something like that.
Which, generally speaking, probably means that he's going to die in this game. But
he's very unlikable.
Yes, he is made that way.
He had to
on
chop
purpose.
His finger off.
He did, yeah. They made him cut his hand off. His Yakuza crimes, like he wanted Kazuma to do it as well. But he also expelled Kazuma from the Dojima family, which means he's no longer
a
Yakuza.
He's a civilian.
But he's a civilian, so he means he can't really get in fights with Yakuza.
Yeah, that's an interesting turn of events.
It is, yeah. I mean, especially, you know, having played all of the other games. And
because they say you can never go back.
Yes.
And I guess he does go back.
Well, yeah, one would assume.
Already knowing that he becomes a Yakuza again.
Yes, it was all in the idea of, like, well, how the hell does he get back? And that's the intrigue for me, is like, wow.
He's trying to find out the guy who framed him now,
yeah.
Who actually murdered this guy in the street. They're all fighting over this empty lot. Once whoever gets control of the empty lot can get the whole area, is
yeah,
it?
Yeah, pretty much.
Somebody who owns that isn't around.
Someone, essentially, what the thing is, Kamurocho, which is Yakuza's stand-in for the Shinjuku area of Tokyo, which is where all the red light district and stuff is. They're because it is such a small area, and I can attest to it, like, you walking around in Yakuza very much feels like you're walking around Shinjuku, because it is very contained. And there is very little vacant space there, and essentially they are trying to find the last bit of real estate that they can build on. There's an empty lot, and they bought all the buildings around it.
Yeah, that's right.
And then there's this empty lot which is in the center
that's
of it.
That's worth like a billion yen.
Yeah, they could never find the owner to try and buy it out, or try and put some muscle onto buying it. And now that deal's in jeopardy.
And now someone's died in the empty lot. Is that right?
Yeah,
you didn't kill him.
No,
you didn't kill him. That's right.
You were set up at the start of the game to carry out some work for a loan shark, and you beat him up in this alley, and then essentially the loan shark or someone, presumably this lieutenant from the Dojima family, has had someone kill this guy and try and frame you, and in doing that, try and frame Oyoban, which is your father figure, whose name is also...
Kazuma.
Kazuma. Yeah, it's the same surname.
Yeah.
It's a super interesting game.
I feel it was a little bit of a slow burner at the beginning, actually. You know,
compared to regular Yakuza standards, I would agree with you.
There are quite a lot of lengthy dialogue scenes between the characters, which, you know, they're important and it is engaging, but perhaps they go on a little too long. You know, they kind of... I don't know. It was all right. I didn't get quite up to the point where I was like, oh, just get on with this.
Right, so
because the dialogue is very well written.
Yes.
For one thing.
So yeah. Yakuza tends to generally... This style of Yakuza game, this kind of level of conversation, a lot of dialogue and stuff, is generally the end of the game. Like, you will ramp up to this, and so you'll be so engaged with the story, like, maybe 10 hours into playing the game, that you won't mind sitting there for half an hour and watching a cutscene. But when I was watching, I was like, man, this is really laying it on thick from the start.
From the start. I can't imagine it's very good for people necessarily new to the series.
No, there's also like a lot of weird stuff with... They kind of shoot some of the scenes of you interacting with, say, the loan shark for the first time. Mm. Almost like manga panels.
Yeah, that continues, isn't it?
Yeah. And so it doesn't animate them as it does in every other Yakuza game. You kind of get... You're there and... It's like a freeze frame of you. So Kiryu,
the mouth doesn't
you
move.
Hear Kiryu speaking, and it's kind of like a weird cell shading over the top of him. And then you just hear the dialogue and read the subtitles. And
that
then you click
every
X,
now and again.
And then it goes
to
the next one. It's really odd. It's kind of a bit jarring, to be honest.
Yeah, I don't know why that's been implemented in this
stylistic
game.
Choice, I guess. Yeah. Another change from the regular Yakuza series is the ability now to almost have like a skill tree.
Yes.
That hasn't been there previously. Previously, you've just unlocked whatever things you wanted to from a menu.
It looks quite complex. When you go onto that map of the abilities you learn, it kind of spreads quite wide. And it's a little bit overwhelming at first, especially when you've got different styles that you level up in.
Yeah.
So you've got one for each style. And then some pass over to the other style. Like I was on the Rush one, but I managed to increase my health, which apparently passes over to any style you
use. Yes, it does.
So... I find that might be... Maybe I get used to it, because I'm just kind of getting my bearings
like,
on Yakuza Zero at the minute.
In the previous Yakuza games, and I could be remembering the name of these wrong, essentially the four paths you had in the first couple of games were Tai Chi, Sai, and... It's essentially something that means dragon. I can't remember what it is. and you would hold down your XP that you gain in each fight, and it would level those bars. Chi was always the health one, so I tended to max that first because I found it was a lot easier to do the battles without that, because money is quite scarce. In this game, it isn't.
Got lots of money.
Money is your XP, which is kind of weird.
Is
so,
it?
Yeah, but do you not notice that? When you're buying those health things, you're spending your money.
Yes.
So there's a weird kind of like, do I spend my money on myself and better items, such as like clothes and body armor and health pickups, or do I spend it on leathering up Kiryu, which is...
Yeah, yeah, it costs money. That's exactly right. Yes, it costs money to upgrade your stats.
And then there's characters, especially in this world, the same way you would run into characters, just regular Yakuza to fight. There's a guy called Shakedown Joe or something like that.
Is he the guy who teaches you stuff?
No. Oh, you haven't run into him yet. There's a guy in the second chapter who introduces you to. And essentially his whole role in the game is he's a really, really tough Yakuza to beat. And all he is there to do is essentially kick the crap out of you, and he doesn't kill you, he just steals all your money. And so it forces you to not hoard money.
Yeah, I spent loads of money just recently upgrading Kiryu before the fight.
Like
the end of that chapter. But then I thought, oh, I haven't got that much left now. You know, you need it kind of get your health up, don't you? You know, you eat to get more health, which I learned quite quickly early on in the game.
You can also go to your hideouts and literally just kind of put the remote control down while it's in the thing.
I didn't know that.
But it's only, it will tell you, it will say, you now have access to the hideout. You can save your game here, view memories, sort your items out, and you will recover health.
I did
all
unlock
the time.
Something into that first chapter, but I can't remember what it was.
When you go to, I think, is a place called New Serena, which is in all the games and has this classic, like,
nice.
Music in the background of like ladies kind of like doing a siren's call.
Okay.
It will go, oh, here's a new hideout, and you can do all these things there. But you can, it's generally to encourage you to put the controller down for 5 minutes, go make a cup of tea, or go get a drink.
Oh,
or
that
something.
Was great, because I was reaching a point where I need to have my breakfast this morning, and if I could have got to that point then, I would have just had my breakfast while I was waiting for him to heal.
So it goes.
I really like it. I think I'm really bowled over by the visuals on Yakuza Zero. Yeah. It's great, and I mean, it really feels like a continuation of what began in Shenmue. I can't not compare it to that, because that's the closest thing
I've been saying this all along. I think it is not only the better continuation of Shenmue, but I think Shenmue 3 was Yakuza for me. Like, I don't, I'm curious to see what Shenmue 3 actually does, but a lot of people have wanted Shenmue 3 for a long time, and after playing the first game and the bit of the second one, I'm like, okay, no, actually,
there is a bit of a difference in Shenmue, of course, because I found a lot more little tasks in Shenmue to do, you know, a lot more different people
be there,
to
don't
talk
worry.
To. They will be.
Yeah.
Because in this first chapter, I didn't find myself doing anything extracurricular. I didn't go and do any extra mini games. I didn't really feel like they were introduced very at the very beginning when you do the karaoke, but I didn't find myself going out of my way to find them. Was I meant to? Because
no,
at the end of the chapter,
you
it says you didn't
chapter.
Get any of this.
Yeah. In the second chapter, you can. In the second chapter, it starts.
It opens
you
up
to
a little
go
bit.
Around and you can go into an arcade and play virtual.
But in fact, there's a lot of pace at the beginning to set up the story.
Yes. Yeah. It's also a lot of onboarding. I mean, the weird thing for me is playing a Yakuza game for the first. Playing each successive Yakuza game is. I think by 5, they're kind of just like, okay, use the buttons.
You know what to do.
You know what to do. Whereas, obviously, Yakuza 0 is meant to be a jumping on point. So they tutorialize it a lot more heavily than they have in the past, perhaps since the first game.
But still, even though it is this jumping on point, it's got a layer of complexity that isn't maybe there in Yakuza 1. So when that remake comes out, that's going to be fairly stripped back unless they've implemented some of these same
systems. See, I was hoping they had, but I don't know if they have. And I have Kiwami on the side, and once I've beaten Zero, eventually I will get into that. I hope play a bit more Zero.
I think
what
I've heard is very much a remake.
Yeah, it seems
without
to be
too many bells and whistles. There's some extra characters maybe that weren't in.
It
the
tries
original.
To gel Yakuza 1 back into Yakuza 0, so there's some more stuff. Nishiki, who ends up being the bad guy of Yakuza 1, is your friend in Yakuza 0, because he was your blood brother. Like, the whole reason Yakuza 1 happens is you go to jail because Nishiki kills someone, and rather than him take the fall, Kazuma goes, no, I say it was me, I'll go to jail for you.
He seems like the stronger man in this game.
Yeah, he does. But the roles are completely reversed in Yakuza 1. Like, Kiryu is the guy who's about to get a family. He's about to become a lieutenant. He's about to take over his own family and whatever. Mm. Whereas, Nishiki's a little bitch, to be honest with you. Mm. He's kind of following around and sulking and stuff. Whereas here, he knows all the ropes. It's a bit weird. I'm curious to see how they kind of gel this story together, and maybe it does show the rise of Kazuma becoming the Kazuma Kiryu everyone
knows.
You get
some flashbacks to their childhood, don't you? When they're sort of idolizing.
Yeah, when they were in the sunflower orphanage. Yeah.
There's a lot going on there. I like the way that first chapter ends with the mysterious figure that appears. And
the guy with the fake hand.
Who's he? Yeah. And I thought, well, I have to do something else now. So I turned it off at that point. But I felt it was a nice point to leave it, and it doesn't make me want to go back to the game. It does these things which are like, I need to see what happens next.
But like I told you, it's like a Teshi Kitano movie, or it's like a very good TV series. There's a lot of cliffhangers. Yeah. And that's what Yakuza 5 kind of let me down a little bit. It's like, it gave me Akiyama, it gave me Saijima, the characters I know.
Mm.
But there was a lot of the Shenmue style, like, oh, you need to go here and do this and do that. It felt like it was a lot of padding in that game that really didn't need to be there. Okay. A lot of these extra functions and stuff that I talked about, like the racing and the hunting and all this stuff that doesn't need to be there.
Mm.
And then they introduce a new character, right? I honestly, I can't remember the guy's name. He's a baseball player. And the whole thing is that, like, there's corruption and stuff, and he doesn't need to be in there. And he plays the guy for like 8 hours, and it's just like,
oh wow,
you are a nothing character. You add nothing to the story. Your inclusion here,
just to pad out the length of the
game. It's just to pad out the game, and because Yakuza 4 had 4 characters, it even gets to the end point where you all split up. Well, you don't even really play as him because you're playing as Saijima, Akiyama, and Kazuma.
I see. Sounds like it gets a little bit complex, all these extra characters. I don't know how well. It's implemented well in 4, as you say.
4 is. See, 4 for me is the payoff of those first 3 Yakuza games. Yakuza 3, not so much, but like it very much is linked into the events that happened in Yakuza 1 and Yakuza 2.
Mm.
And like some of the stuff that then flowed through 3.
Mm.
It felt like it capped the series in a way that I don't think they necessarily needed to open everything back up for Yakuza 5.
Right, so maybe it should have ended at 4.
Maybe. And I'm curious to see what 6 does now.
Yeah.
And after that, who knows?
But if 6 there has got Takeshi Kitano.
6 has Takeshi Kitano, and essentially it is the last game with Kiryu, Kazuma and Majima and probably a lot of these other characters.
Yeah.
And it is billed as such, like the front of the box says that.
I think that, for me, the best thing about this Yakuza game, maybe the franchise in general from what I've experienced of it, is how well fleshed out the characters are.
Yes.
You know, for digital characters, you know, their mannerisms are very well, what would I say?
Acted.
Yeah, although I guess they're acted. I guess motion capture, isn't it? But they all have great, unique characters.
They do.
They all feel incredibly real.
Yes.
Which is amazing for a video game to have that, I think.
And this is the thing I think
everyone's individual,
miss.
Aren't they, in Yakuza? All the characters are quite different.
You know, over this 100 or so hour arc now, of me playing these games and seeing the trials and tribulations of Kiryu Kazuma, like, he is perhaps one of the greatest video game characters of all time. Mm. He's an incredibly well-rounded character. He's perhaps even one of the best literary characters of all time, in my opinion. Like, he does a lot of cool stuff.
I like his motivations and his attitude. Seems very good and right.
And, you know, like, there is a lot of this show and jump, like, hey, I want to be strong for my friends stuff, which is perhaps where it falls apart on the literary character scale. But he's a very complex character, and I think the stories they tell with him are great stories.
And it's amazing, just with their eyes sometimes.
Yeah.
You know, these characters, for digital characters, it says a lot, doesn't it?
Yeah.
They don't have to say anything.
No.
It's so well observed.
Yeah, it's a good game, for sure.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, great first impressions of that game. I'll be coming back for more.
You should. And then get on Kawami.
Hey, I just want to mention a game that impressed me recently. I didn't expect it to.
Okay.
I decided to check out Sonic 4 Episode 2 again.
Right.
It's so much better than the first one.
Okay.
I won't say it's as good as Mania, of course, but it's actually a lot to appreciate in that game. It's amazing. It's leaps and bounds ahead of the first one. I reached a point in that game originally, at the very beginning, I think it was on the first level, actually, where there's this stupidly difficult stage. But somehow, when I went to play it this time, I'd realised you're able to do all the worlds. You don't have to do it in order.
Okay.
Or did that unlock? Because I unlocked some sort of Metal Sonic episode, so you get to play through the original Sonic 4 Episode 1 as Metal Sonic through these different levels, which are a lot better than levels are in the original one.
Yeah.
I had that game sitting on my PlayStation for such a long time, and I was just really impressed when I went back to it.
That's cool.
Yeah.
It
looks very nice, you know, the lighting, the design, and, you know, once you look over the fact that Sonic doesn't handle exactly the same, it's actually still quite playable.
Yeah, I almost beat Sonic Mania the other day, by the way.
You did. I haven't gone back to it, actually, in the last week or two.
I can confirm I'm not a fan of Sonic. I've played that last two levels over and over and over again. I don't know. It's just something that doesn't gel right with me on that level of, like, technical complexity. And I know this is a Sonic game for fans by fans, but I don't know. I just don't find the boss fights enjoyable.
Up until that point, though, the level design, at least.
There is some level design in there. There's amazing, amazing music. Like, I understand why people like Sonic now, but I can wholly reject Sonic going, this game is not my cup of tea.
One playthrough of that level was quite frustrating, and... Yeah, I haven't gone back to it since.
I tried to beat it for about 2 hours, and I kept dying on the end boss. So
yeah, it's a challenge there.
I hate that style of once you're dead, you need to continue. You have no continues.
Mm.
It's awful. Like I would like to try that boss a couple of times and get the patterns down.
Mm.
But anytime I get there, I feel like I only have one or two lives, and then I can't figure out how to do that boss well enough.
Yeah.
It's really shit.
I think it's a game that's definitely made for people who've been playing Sonic games all their lives.
Yeah, I'm also really shit at the blue ball puzzle thing, so I don't even have enough Chaos Emeralds to fight the Trura boss. So yeah. I'm going to do it.
I found out the other day my little cousin had beat it before me. He's pretty adept at video games, so I shouldn't be surprised. But I'm still struggling, and he's already done it.
Fair enough.
So I don't know. I think it's a great game, but that last level, I need to do it again and see if it's frustrating me the same way, or maybe I've got my head around it now.
Fair enough. I need to beat it. I'm at the end. I'll do it, but will be the last Sonic game.
I just want to say, don't discount Sonic 4 Episode 2 because the first one's not so good.
I'll check it out.
It's actually worth playing, and I'm surprised I'm saying that, but it is pretty good. Although it does have that kind of budget game aesthetic to it in places. In places it looks really nice, but other bits, it's really inconsistent, which is a strange thing. There's a level at the end of this fortress, flying fortress level, which is amazing. The lighting is fantastic. I mean, I you can tell I'm impressed.
I know.
But yeah, I mean, that's what I've played this week.
Okay.
Mainly.
I haven't really played a lot else this week. We were at an event, should we say, for work. I shall leave that event nameless. And there were some arcade machines there. And so as a result of that, I jumped straight on the arcade. I beat Raiden 2, which is a shmup.
I've played it. You know, I think I've got it on the PlayStation.
It was released on PlayStation 1 in the Raiden Collection.
That's right, I have played that. Probably completed it.
I would like to pick up now after playing that.
I do remember playing all the way through at least one of those games on that collection.
And fortunately I was like, okay, I'll get to the end of this, and then it loops. It does the R-type thing where once you've beaten the game through once, it goes, okay, cool, you're on level 2 now, so we'll increase the speed. And I was just like, okay, there's no end thing for this. There's nothing to beat in this game.
Yeah.
But it absolutely knackered my wrist, and I was so glad we were playing on a free-to-play arcade, because that would have cost me a lot of money to beat that game.
Very playable game.
Very playable. Mm. Quite tough in places. Beautiful, though. I mean, it's 1993.
Mm.
It's by a company called Saibu Kaihatsu, who I'm not actually familiar with their work, to be honest.
No.
But after a bit of a quick Wikipedia, I could see that other than the Raiden games, and that was their main shtick for a lot of things, they did a lot of other shmups that I was looking at. And those are Viper Phase 1. They did a series of game called Raiden Fighters. which is very much linked to the first Raiden games. Like, that was the main bread and butter, was those kind of games, and they're very good at making shmups. They did also make a game called Dynamite Duke, which I've never seen or played. It was apparently published by Tecmo, and is on the Genesis as well. It's also on the Sega Master System.
Hmm.
I haven't played it. Can't talk to it. Hmm. But, yeah, all in all, I was very impressed with that. And I actually played a Taito game that I had never, ever seen before.
Was it that gangster one?
Yeah, it was.
Yeah.
It was called Dead Connection, I believe.
That's quite unique, wasn't it, the way that played?
Yeah, so it was a single screen, and essentially you had... It would give you an amount of gangsters that were going to come through this stage, so it would be, like, started with 10. It's like, you need to clear out the 10 gangsters. So you're on this single screen, and it's all environmental, and what you're pretty much doing is walking around, and you can shoot in 360 degrees.
Yeah.
So enemies will come at you from all angles, and then as you shoot enemies and blow up scenery, you get more health, and you get different types of guns. It's really, really well done.
Very Dick Tracy style.
Yeah, very Dick
it?
Tracy. He was clearly inspired, and I was reading this afterwards, and I was like, yeah, actually, you're right. The way even the plot is told between the screens, it's very much trying to be The Untouchables, the De Niro movie.
We think it came out around the same
time. It did,
time.
Yeah, it did. Yeah. And some of the actors are apparently, like, the main guy is supposed to look like Kevin Costner, and there may have potentially been a lawsuit, which is probably why it's never been released on anything else.
Right.
But Dead Connection, I played...
It's never been released on a Taito collection,
anyway. I don't think
anyway.
So. I think it's on one of the Taito collections on the PS2, but I think it's only in Japan, from what I've seen.
Right, okay.
But it looked good, it played well, and yeah, it was one of those ones that I'm like, well, if it hasn't been released anywhere, there's probably no plans for it, I may just download it on MAME and play it at home. It was good. I recommend you checking it out.
Yeah, I played a couple of games at the event as well. I was kind of disappointed how badly Tekken 1's aged.
Yeah,
oh,
not good.
Oh, God, it was a bit painful playing that. Especially in comparison to Mortal Kombat 3, which was 10 times more enjoyable.
Yeah.
But... yeah, it was cool to play some old arcade games.
Did you get any Windjammers in?
I didn't get to play Windjammers. I should have done, because that would be quite a good thing to do, considering it's available now on PlayStation.
I was very much impressed with it, and I'm going to pick up that PlayStation 4 remaster. It's also cross-buy with the Vita. So
That's nice. Always
it is,
nice.
Yeah.
I think that's from the team who did the Wonder Boy game.
It is, yeah. All good in the hood.
Have you picked up any games?
I
all?
Did not buy anything. I don't think so. Anyway, yeah. I know. I've been a good boy as of late.
Very good.
I picked up Rayman Rabbids, like I said. Yes. Kiwami arrived as well.
Yeah, my copy, I've ordered it.
Yeah.
But it hasn't arrived. It's out of stock on Amazon.
Oh, that's interesting.
Everybody's Golf was also delayed from Amazon. But that's apparently that's arrived now.
I pre-ordered Yakuza months and months ago.
Yeah.
I pre-ordered it
about 3 weeks before it came out.
Okay.
Yeah. And still not available.
Oh, that's a shame.
Got a great price, though. £24.
£24 for the steelbook, yeah.
Yes.
It was all right, isn't it?
About the same for everybody's Golf as well. And now I see those prices have sort of risen.
Yeah, they have. Amazon. Risen.
But yeah, I bought a few other things. Matt was kind enough to pick me up Digimon for PS1 the other day after really enjoying Digimon World on the PS4. Yeah. I wanted to try the original. I'm hoping it might be a little bit easier just having one Digimon to look
after. I think it was
pretty
good from what I remember. I've played that Digimon game quite a bit.
But it seems to be relatively expensive for what is a common game.
Yeah.
I think it's a common game, at least. I remember.
I know a lot of people have had it, so yeah. More so than Monster Rancher, anyway, put it that way.
Yeah, I used to have Monster Rancher, but I sold that.
My mate Jonathan did, and he was one of those games I always regret not trying to buy off him.
Yeah.
That and Azure Dreams, both of them.
I'll give that a go. I also got Sled Storm, which is an Electronic Arts sledding.
Yeah.
what do you call them?
EA.
What do you call them?
It's like a snowmobile.
Snowmobile, yeah. Yeah, it's a snowmobile. Insane Snowmobile Racing.
Mm-hmm.
I remember hearing that this game was good. It looks a bit ropey from the screenshots on the back.
It does.
But, you know, I'm good...
It was a very weird thing, though, actually, because you messaged me and I messaged you about Digimon World, and I took loads of pictures of the disc and the condition of everything, And then you said to me, you were just like, oh, they got Sled Storm.
I keep seeing it in there.
And I literally had it in my hand like seconds before. Okay, well, if you'd seen it in there, then that explains it a bit more. But I was just like, shit, what are the odds?
Every time I'd been in there, I'd seen it. And I could never remember if it was actually worth it or not. Because I have a list of things I'm interested in getting. And that, it's been on there for months.
Fair enough.
I picked up a few other things. I did it again, didn't I? NFL Tour. For the 360.
Oh, Christ.
It sold it to me as this is the easiest pick-up-and-play American football game.
Yeah.
And even though I said to myself I was done because I could not, even the, what they call the series, Street Series, which is meant to be a little bit more accessible, I couldn't get my head around that. But this is one last chance for American football.
Fair enough.
It was only 30 kroner, so...
Should pick up the quarterback club games for the... Super Nintendo, because they're just mini games that revolve around football. So like you kick and you throw and you tackle,
yeah,
a bit track and field style.
Right. Okay. Oh, well, that's worth thinking about then. Toxic Grind for the Xbox, which is a BMX game, I think.
Okay. Don't know.
Which is actually meant to be good.
Yeah. Okay. I believe you.
you didn't look very sure then. And Puyo Pop for the Game Boy Advance.
Oh, nice.
I finally got a copy.
That is a good game.
A box copy of Puyo Pop.
I got a cartridge, but I can confirm, just as good. I did pick up something, actually, I tell a lie. Friend of the podcast, Adam, runner of Retro Gamer, messaged me and said, oh...
Retro Gamer?
Retro Collect, sorry. God, I'm tired. Yeah, as mentioned before this podcast, not only did we have a full Sunday lunch, but I also may or may not have had some alcohol. For Retro Collect, messaged me and said, hey, you should check this out, and then sent me a link. And it was an Italian website, and they had a copy of Tumble Pop, which is quite an obscure Game Boy game, to say the least, with a UKV label. And that is the European launch of it, and so far between the Retro Collect members, I think we've only ever seen 5 copies. It is a very, very, very rare game. It is even debated whether it was actually ever released.
Well, it sounds like it's very expensive then.
No, €20. So I was like, I saw it, I was like, okay, I'm gonna take the gamble on this because I paid a lot more for my American copy, and that's a lot more common.
Okay.
So yeah, I'll perhaps.
So you know the game.
I do know the game. It's very good. It's by Data East. It's very much in the Bubble Bobble.
You bought a variant of it.
Well, I bought the European label of it because now I can just sell my US one and get the money back. So it's all good.
Right. Cool. I was going to ask, actually, I wrote down on here just some subjects we could talk about this week, and I wanted to ask you actually.
Yeah.
What is it about Game Boy games?
Simplicity.
I think maybe we've covered this in the past.
I think so. For me, it's the age-old adage of simplicity and restriction creates creativity. Yeah. It's very limited what you can do on a Game Boy, and to make a very good game in those limitations that can be judged as this is a good game or this is a bad game.
It's interesting for you to see then when you get a new Game Boy game how they, you know, use that technology.
Yeah, exactly.
To make a game.
I just also think there's something very nice about it. These games are meant to be played on the go, so they're generally not very long, which is something I appreciate as someone with very limited time.
I imagine you have a nostalgia for it as well.
I do. It was the first console that was technically mine. But also, I do genuinely believe it's got some of the best games of all time on it. Mm. So... yes, they may be iterated upon. Yes, there may be better versions of those games on other consoles.
Do you like the dinky packaging?
I do.
The small cartridges.
Very nice about the box size, the cartridges.
Especially the Japanese size boxes.
No.
I really like those mini ones.
I like some of the Japanese style boxes, but they're clearly made to be in a smaller home. Yes, there's like box art, hands down, is 9 times out of 10 better.
You like the slightly bigger one?
I do like the square boxes of the Game Boy and Game Boy Advance and colour. Yeah, it is what it is.
Oh, of course, I was just thinking about it today, you know, because it's not often I buy a Game Boy game, and I got my copy of Puyo Pop, and I was like, oh, yeah, there's something appealing about this little package.
There is.
And... of course, yes, some great games on Game Boy, and you don't really need a lot of processing power to play Puyo Pop.
No,
do you
don't. And to be honest with you, like of all my games, and as we go into a weird situation that I won't really talk about on the podcast, it's like looking at the stuff around me and looking at like, well, if I had to pack up and go and if I had to leave where I am currently, perhaps I wouldn't take any of my Sega and a lot of my other games with me. Perhaps I would just sell them and then be done with it.
Hmm.
Whereas my portable games actually do have a special place in my heart. I know what I have with my portable systems, perhaps even more than my NES and Super Nintendo at this point. And those collections are nowhere near
as big.
That's
where your focus has been, hasn't it?
Because it's where my focus has been. It's where I've found some very hidden gems. And to be honest with you, the Game Boy just doesn't get a lot of love. So,
yeah, it seems to be all about the NES, especially in the States, doesn't it? Because that
it's the nostalgia, right?
Yeah,
you know, it's the same reason I collect Game Boy games. Same collection reason you collect things like PS2 and N64.
Well, definitely not PS2. I have no nostalgia for that system. The only reason I have a lot of PS2 games is because there's a lot of games for it.
Yeah, but
and
I mean, like,
quite
you
cheap.
Were also working in games retail
and
at the time.
Yeah,
and
at
you
the
were
time
just
when
like, wow,
PS2 games were pretty cheap at the time. But in terms of nostalgia and the consoles I appreciate the most, it's probably be the N64 and the Dreamcast.
Yeah.
Mass System has a very special place in my heart because of that's my first console.
I don't think you really collect for the Mass
System. I don't
System,
really
though.
Collect for it. You know, there's a great few games on it. A lot of them actually I downloaded on the Wii.
Yeah.
Which I was thinking about recently, looking through my collection of games I've downloaded on Wii, which I now play through my Wii U.
Yeah.
You know, especially using this NES pad that I've got that was made for the NES Mini. You know, that package itself is great, and it means that I don't need a Super Mini Super Nintendo.
Yeah.
Because I have all the games I want, and games that aren't on that I like.
Yeah.
I've got this perfectly customized, tailored towards me way to play these old games, also in HD using the Wii U.
Yeah, you can just buy that Super Nintendo controller anyway if you really wanted it.
Perhaps. So, you know, what I think about when I think about the success of these consoles, I think they're absolutely great for people who haven't played games in years. You know, that they used to play Super Nintendo, they haven't touched a thing, it's in a loft or something. Yeah. They want to replay these games. This is the best way to do it, I think. It's all there, one little package, you know. But for those gamers who, you know, nothing wrong with picking up if you're a hardcore game and you want to have it because it's cool
I'll
thing.
Pick it up.
But to me, the value of it for that purpose, if you collect games and maybe already have a library of games, isn't as much as it is for somebody who
just wants to pick up and play.
You just want to relive some of that nostalgia. And the fact that the consoles get sold out so quickly because everybody wants them does mean, I imagine, that people who just want to pick this up, you know, just to have a bit of fun on, won't be able to get it. I think that's a tremendous shame.
It is.
The people maybe who are buying it the most are the ones who can already play these games.
Yeah, you're right.
Not saying there's anything wrong with buying it if you're a massive hardcore gamer. That's absolutely cool. But yeah, I just feel it's a little bit of a shame. It's not really being people who want it for the purpose it was made for aren't necessarily being able to get it.
No, you're totally right. To be honest with you, the one reason I would like to own it was the fact that it's got Star Fox 2 on it. I love that series.
That's how they've aimed it, haven't
they?
Way
too much to not get that console for it. And I mean, to be honest with you, like, looking down this list of games, it generally has most of the games that I would want to play.
They
on
always
my
have
Super
great
Nintendo.
Selections, that's right.
I mean, it's got Contra 3. I have that as a cartridge, but it saves me setting up American Super Nintendo. Yeah. I've got Donkey Kong Country. I've got Earthbound, but it's on my Wii U, and I generally don't turn on my Wii U these days. It'd be nice to have it somewhere where I can just turn it on, play it, and I know the save's going to be there. I know everything's going to be working. It's going to be good. Final Fantasy 3 is a game that I crack open quite a lot, and my cartridges are very old. I think the battery is starting to go. F-Zero is a game that will play great in 60 frames a second because there's a lot of slowdown on the PAL version of it.
Yeah,
Kirby Superstar and Dream Course, they're good games, but I'm not that bothered. Links to the Past will be great to play that again.
You see, all these games are listed. I already downloaded them on Wii U.
I didn't.
Yeah.
This is the thing.
Yeah.
Mega Man X, I have. I love it. It's a great game. Secret of Mana, admittedly, I will probably play it through on the Switch in Japanese, or I will play that in the updated
downloaded
version.
It on the Wii.
Star Fox 2, Street Fighter Turbo, that'd be good for a laugh. Take it into the office or whatever and have a quick game of that. Castlevania 4.
It's very interesting that maybe the eShop didn't do as well as everybody I thought it did, because if the eShop did do as well as I thought it did, that maybe there wouldn't be such a demand for buying these games all again on another system that you can plug in with HDMI cable.
Well, I mean, let's be honest.
I guess the Wii U didn't sell as well. This is, for a lot of people's only way to play these easily in HD.
Yeah.
But I think, comparatively, if you think about the prices these things are going for, you know, eventually be going for,
yeah,
it might be cheaper just to buy a Wii U and download them. It
might be cheaper to buy a bloody Super Nintendo, the games, to be honest.
They, yeah, but I guess the appeal is playing them in HD.
Yeah.
With that ease of modern,
as you can just
television.
Do that with an emulator on a modern television with a Raspberry Pi and 20 quid and a little bit of know-how.
I think I'm just surprised that not more people didn't already pick these games up when they were last available.
Probably a lot of people did, but at the same time,
they still want to have them all on another box.
But I mean, they've also clearly not released them on the Switch yet, which has got people wondering, will they ever? So,
yeah. Maybe it's because it hasn't worked out and they see this model as being a better model for releasing your games on. We release these little consoles.
Perhaps.
It's doing better business for them than releasing the games individually on the Wii U. I have noticed, actually, the Wii U, they've released a lot of TurboGrafx games recently.
Yeah.
A lot of those great TurboGrafx games, you know, the Bonk series, you know, they haven't put Castlevania Dracula X, that one, on there. But I had been playing that recently. I downloaded it on the Wii. And that's a fantastic game. Really blew me away. I really did enjoy that. The presentation of it as well, because I think it's a CD-based game. You've got a lot of proper audio on
it. Redbook audio and all this jazz. Yeah, it's
fantastic game. That's sort of like, oh, when will Nintendo ever do a PC Engine?
Yeah.
Will they do a collaboration there with Hudson, I guess, and do a little mini PC Engine? Because that's the one to get, I think, because you know, not everybody has played these PC Engine games.
There's so much TurboGrafx stuff that's really cool. I don't think they ever would, though. That's the issue.
Hmm. It was definitely a thing in the US, at least, wasn't it? You know, it was.
God, Double Dragon 4 is on you.
Yes, Double Dragon 4 is all right. It's not as great retro remake as Sonic Mania, though. If you compare, you know, something coming back, it's not really much better than what went before.
No, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Yeah, some things on you, like Magic Lord.
You're
stuff.
On your Switch eShop now.
I am on my
now.
Switch looking at the TurboGrafx and PC Engine games and going, shit.
So there is some virtual console on the Switch.
Well, yeah, but I mean, it isn't really a virtual console, is it? Like, it is not the hey, this is the store where all of your Super Nintendo things live or whatever. Like,
Yeah, they appear to have done away with that concept of a virtual console.
Yeah, but it also makes the store really messy. Like, look at this. Like, it's just a long list that I have to scroll through.
Yeah, that Wii U store was pretty good. You know, you could select each console, even the original Wii store.
Yeah, that's true. It was a lot better than this.
Yeah, and all that WiiWare that is lost in time now and is only available
on
there.
Wii. And it's still available for purchase.
And it's still available.
I need to actually maybe just get a few Nintendo points and buy some of the things like the Castlevania
I've
game.
Bought Castlevania Rebirth, Contra Rebirth. There's a great little puzzle game that you play three player.
Yeah.
And each of the three puzzle games is different, all playing out on the same screen.
Okay.
But they affect each other. You know, elements of one game can transfer over to the other game.
Right.
And so you can influence what's happening in the other games as you play one of the other games.
Yeah.
It's a little harder concept to describe. All the games are very simple and only involve a few little button presses. But the fact that you can play them all together at the same time.
That's really
with
cool.
With two other players. It's a very unique game.
What's it called?
I cannot remember because it's got a very obscure name, Japanese name that begins with D or something.
Okay.
I can never remember what it's called. It's like some sort of arcade puzzle collection.
Okay.
But it was unique to the Wii.
That's
made by Nintendo.
It isn't released then on anything else.
I cannot remember what it's called, but it's ranked among one of the best WiiWare titles. There's also a good one called Jet Rocket, which is a 3D platformer, which doesn't get talked about quite a lot. I did a little bit of research into this not so long ago and made a list of these WiiWare games I had to play. And I have picked up a fair few of them now. And there really is some impressive stuff there that could do with maybe a re-release to get it out to a wider audience.
Yeah.
I think the Gladiator, the first person Gladiator game got re-released. That's where, you know, you see the enemies in first person, you swing your Wii remote like a sword, or you've got a shield.
Okay.
Raid of the Gladiator or something like that.
I don't know.
It's well regarded on WiiWare, and I think got released somewhere else at some point.
Okay.
But I think it's on mobile phones or something like that.
Of course it is.
It's a good game.
I can't see it on this on the internet, but let us know next week.
Yes,
I'm sure there are some very good things on there that I need to.
3-in-1 WiiWare puzzle game, then you might find it.
No, it doesn't seem to be coming up so far on like the best Wii games.
Oh,
Wii
really? Games. I found it on a. We're just looking things up on our devices now.
Yeah, we're typing away furiously.
Oh, here we go. So we can tell you what this game's called. 3-in-1 puzzle.
No, it's
game.
Not coming up, Tom. It's not coming
Wii.
Up.
Where?
Let's give it a couple of seconds, Tom, because we need to get on with the podcast.
Oh, no. Yes.
Is it called Rattle Battle?
No. You keep talking, Matt. I'll look.
Okay. To be honest, I was probably going to wrap up the podcast if there's no
well,
more
you can
to
do
say.
That.
Yeah. Okay, well,
and I'll find it
for
you right now.
I will say that if you have enjoyed listening to this podcast, not the last 10 minutes worth Googling, you can find us in a variety of places on tomandmattattack.com/podcast, on blastprocess.com and blastprocess.com's YouTube channel, as well as in iTunes and the old Stitches. While you're in iTunes, why not give us cheeky rate and subscribe and share the podcast if you think it's worth listening to two people who you think would like listening to it. You can also find us in a few other places, such as
great.
Twitter or TMA Cast, and Facebook at facebook.com/TomAndMattAttack. Tom, did you find the name?
I haven't found this mystery WiiWare game that was made by Nintendo and is really good.
Then, much like the first chapter of Yakuza 0, we should leave it on a cliffhanger.
Oh,
until
next find
week,
out next
Game
week.
Boys and girls and everyone else out there, game on.
Game on.